sort of character last time. We did the famous disputation, Christian-Jewish disputation, of the Bethlehemite.
Right. The two bait
questions. This is in
the
back.
We're a pair of capers and dolls. Okay. Everyone have it? So says, from then on there will be shalom. It was described what we did last time as the onslaught of the Assyrians. Now let me just describe the 7th century BCE. Assyrians destroyed the 10 tribes in 722. Marched on Jerusalem in 701, were unsuccessful. You
pen?
The Assyrians were unsuccessful in their conquest of Yehuda in the year 701, and although Jerusalem was saved, it was by no means a rosy picture at that point. Right? The Assyrians ruled Israel with an iron fist for the next 80 years or so, and there is a plethora of information describing what they did to us, more in Assyrian records than in Tanakh. And they're pretty much consistent. Namely, that they really stuck it to us.
Right? Did you say ruled Israel? You said mentioned Yehuda also?
Yes, yeah, Yehuda.
Okay, you said Israel.
Right? Now, they did not conquer Yehuda like they conquered the other nations. Hashem said they wouldn't, so they didn't. They also, Menashe, wicked King Menashe.
So what happened? Sorry, Rabbi. So it was essentially Yerushalayim cut off, and Yerushalayim the only thing that was autonomous, or?
I couldn't call it autonomous. The Assyrians really running the show. Now, did they do to Yehuda what they did to everyone else? No. What does that mean? Pick them up physically from their place and drive them out someplace else. They did not do that to Yerushalayim. Now, Menashe worshipped just about every Assyrian god that the ancient world knew. Maybe that he felt that if I do that, they'll leave me alone, or at least they won't destroy me. Because I'm worshipping their god. And I hate them. Okay. So, this is what's going to happen. Asher, now Micha now is reading a little like Sefer Nochum. Nochum describes the impending destruction of Asher because of what they did to us. Alright, take a look at this. Asher ki yavo ba'arsenu v'chi yidroch ba'armanosenu. Pasuk Dalet. When Asher comes into our land and walks all over our strongholds and our castles, ha'kemonu olav shiva roim u'shmona nisichei adam. Right? Now remember, the very end of Ma'oz Tzur, it says, Admon the tail, Tamon Hokin, Manaroim Shiva. It says, Dechei Admon the tail, Tamon. If you really read between the lines, that's saying, destroy Christianity, Dechei Admon, okay, the tail, Tamon, in the shadow of death, Hokin, Manaroim Shiva. Bring for us the 7 leaders. That's exactly what he's referring to here. That's why he uses the Lashon Hakem Lanu Roim Shiva, because look what he says. Hakemonu. He's simply using Micha's Lashon. Now, who are these 7 Roim and 8 Nesichim? A Nesich. Nesich is a terminology for a ruler, prince. Actually, Chazal say that Avram's brother had a daughter named Yiska, that Rashi insists is Sarah. Mm-hmm. Right? Yiska in Aramaic means the same as Sarah in Hebrew. They both mean the princess. Mm. Okay? Mm. So anyway, so who are these 7 and 8 different people? The Gemara at the end of Masechet Sukkah identifies them. They are 15 identifiable people in Tanakh. Okay? Hmm. 2 of them being one Mashiach ben Yosef and one Mashiach ben David. And Eliyahu. Make that 3. And there's supposed to be a Kohen Tzedek, the next Kohen Gadol, and then there are various people that are
And Yosef, same as Mashiach and Ephraim, so I was reading something.
Indeed, yes. There were two kingdoms, one from Ephraim and one from Yehuda. So there are two kingdoms, there will be two Mashiachs. Now, what makes us, what gives us the right to talk about two Mashiachs? Because Zechariah refers to B'nai Yitzhar. Yecheskel refers in chapter 38 of his book to two leaders in the future. They will, in each and every one of them, they one gives way. Ben Yosef gives way for Ben David. The Gemara very conveniently, Gemara especially in Maseches Sukkah, a little bit in the Yerushalmi Sanhedrin, discuss the concept of Mashiach Ben Yosef. Not a very common Indian in Chazal. The Vilna Gaon wrote a treatise, Everything You Need to Know About Mashiach Ben David, Ben Yosef.
What's it called?
I think it's just within part of his. I think it's in part of his Perush. Part of his Perush to. I think it's part of the Perush. A page or two in the Perush. Now I'm going to tell you everything about Mashiach.
I wonder if the Christian's name, the father, the spirit of father of Jesus, Yosef.
It's possible. It's just that Jesus is descended according to their theology from Yehuda. But I will tell you this: that when the Gemara in Sukkah finds very different descriptions, not only of the person but of the time period of Mashiach's time, between Daniel and Yeshayahu, between Yechezkel and Zechariah, between this and that. Our Gemara says this is Mashiach ben Yosef and this is Mashiach ben David. Of course, in Christian theology, In Christian theology, they just say this is the first coming and this is the second coming. You know, you see the difference between those two answers is that we have our prophets l'chatchila from the outset spoke about Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben Yosef, but Christian theology did not teach about two comings while Jesus was still around. Adarabba, he bragged that my kingdom come and you shall all see it. Mm-hmm. He never talks about a second coming. He never talks about a contingency plan in case he's not successful. He never said he wouldn't be successful. Okay, anyway, it's not for us.
I think B'nai Yitzhar and Zechariah is not talking about the Kohen Gadol and the...
He's talking about the two trees that are feeding into the menorah.
I thought I read the one supposed to be the Kohen Gadol and the other supposed to be the...
There is no doubt many, many different interpretations to that. No doubt. But that's the Maamar Chazal that is talking about the two Yisrael meaning oil and Mashiach meaning right. Word oil, so that's where they got it. Okay, let's go continue now. We're in Perek Hay and Micha Pasuk Hay. Okay. So these people, Vira'u, this is probably some kind of pun, Vira'u es Eretz Ashur. These Roim Shiva will Ra'u. That it means to do evil. What do you have in your English? Do you have will leave?
They will pound.
They will break the land.
Break, pound, wow. Okay, that's a pun then. See from the word Roim, what does a Ro'e do? He leads, right? But here it says he will do something evil too. You know, when Paro says Re'u ki ra'o neged p'neichem, right? So Rashi says that's not evil will come to you. That's my sun god Ra, Re'u ki ra neged p'neichem, and he'll beat down on you. If you want to take so many people out in the desert, my god, sun god will kill you. Considering that the next plague was Choshech, Moshe was telling him about about the strength of your sun god, right? Okay, so. So here also there's some kind of ponderous es eretz asher b'cherev ve'es eretz nimrod b'tzachah. Well, that's why, of course, your English reads that way because of how the pasuk continues. Okay, b'cherev and es eretz nimrod and the land of Nimrod. Where is asher, the land of Nimrod? It's very simple. It says in Bereishis that he built his kingdom in Kalmei and in Shinar. All right, so. If he's that's the land that the Assyrians inhabited, later that the Babylonians inhabited, but that's so he's using a pun. It's Eretz Nimrod. Why not? And the other Nevi'im call Mitzrayim the land of Chom, right? The land of Moph and Noph, right? Okay. So Eretz Nimrod dipsachah, meaning her Sha'arim, her gates. V'itzil me'ashur ki yavo v'artzeinu v'chi yidrof b'shvileinu. V'itzil means to despoil, really, but they'll take everything out of Asher because of what they did to our land. Okay? All right, let's read around a little bit. Richard, did you get started with Vav?
V'hayo? She'erit Yaakov bekerev amim rabim v'tal Kital me'es aronoi kirvivim ale esev asher lo yekaveh le'ish v'lo yeyachil livnei adam.
This is a very, really quite a simple prophecy. It's it may seem scary because it's so long. I'm just bothered with the masculine v'haya and the feminine she'erit. But that's something that happens so often. It could either be that the V'haya goes on Yaakov, possibly, or the inyan will be that, and the V'haya inyan hazeh, legabe shevit Yaakov, as such. Good. So the remnant of Yaakov that will remain after them, after that, b'kerav amim rabim. This goes back to what we saw a few months ago with the Ten Tribes film. Those descendants of Yaakov will fill up many nations. Like dew, me'es Hashem, from God, kirvim alei esev, like the many rains on the grass. And it means that Jews will inhabit the entire world. They'll be cast around the world. And, you know, we saw a very interesting video some time ago, so for those of you who haven't seen it, that indicates that there are Jewish practitioners around the world. Right? There are about 12 million people in the world who call themselves Jews. There are more than that many in India who claim to be descended from the lost tribes. Okay, I think the film said about 100 million people around the world are allegedly descendants of these lost tribes. Look, at the time of the Roman conquest, there were more Jews than Chinese. Okay, get the picture? All right, So the Shaloi Kaveli Ishwa Yechel is Neadam. Pashup Shach means they'll be self-sufficient. They will not need any help in those places. The Jews will get by. In fact, one of our real problems is that wherever we go, we do better than the host nation. We outdo them. The secret of Jewish success would be if, I'm not saying we never did this, but it's an important aspect of our success, is that if the host nation sees our presence there as a blessing to them, that our success leads to their success, which generally would happen if we ever get the chance to show it, but it never really worked because the host nation didn't like the fact that we didn't worship their God. So that really never allowed the success to amount to anything. It was always a great, flourishing golden age in any country where we were able to stay for 200 to 300 years. And so they got fed up with our success, or fed up with the fact that we didn't worship their God. So anyway, here he's saying that we will not have to depend on anyone else. We'll be able to depend on ourselves, which has always been the case. We always do very well when given equal opportunity.
I'm confused with the translation in the article. It says, like raindrops upon grass, which is not hoped for from man and not awaited from a human being.
Very puzzling.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll just say that where they will be, Lo yitzterchu l'shum ish o'am. I'm quoting the Das Nikra. It's a mashal. V'haya she'erit Yaakov b'goyim b'kerev amim rabim. Look at this, it's just a mamash quote. The same exact words from the previous pasuk. Right? The first seven or eight words of the pasuk.
One was she'erit Yaakov. This,
and they're both she'erit There it's b'kerev amim rabim. Here it's b'goyim b'kerev amim rabim. Ke'ariyek b'bahamos, like a lion in the forest, the bahamos yar. Ke'kfir b'edrei tzon. In other words, you'll be the
bahamos. Is that a smichus of behemos? Bahamas?
No, but who Bahamas Yah means a
animals.
That's how they translate it—a lion among animals.
So. Right. Yeah.
That's a lion, like a
lion amongst the sheep, right?
When is this supposed to be?
Who's the lion here?
Sounds like the remnant of Yaakov.
Yeah. Ravenel insists that they can't be. How could Micha make such a profoundly false prophecy?
Right, that the lion was in the
fire. Of what the Jews have been all throughout history. The Jews have never been a lion amongst lambs in the diaspora.
It has to hide in the forest.
He's talking about the diaspora. It's Yisakov Bagoyim, the Caravanim.
The lion has to hide in the forest.
Why can't it be Israel among the Arabs?
I understand, but wherever we've been, you mean referring to today?
Yeah.
That's in our land. Jews in the Arab lands are not, they're talking about the Kerev Amim Rabim, in the midst of many nations. Right? Rabbi Nel says that the reason why it's written twice is that one refers to Christendom, one refers to Islam, and the Jews are the ones in the forest, and the Muslims and Christians are the ones in the lions. I'm not sure how he could possibly read that in the Pshat, but
right.
He says the Goyim, clearly, Ishmael and Edom are the Aryeh and the Kfir. The Aryeh is Christianity, the Kfir is Islam, we are the Tzon.
That's what Robert Nell says.
Yep, the Heshu Yisakob begin the Kerev Amim Rabim. They will be in the Kerev Amim Rabim, and they will be in a situation that is like Aryeh Babamos Yar and Kfir Be'edre Tzom. That's how the Rav Nel reads the pasuk. Right?
Did your question get answered about why it was Bahamos instead of something else?
No, that's good. Yeah.
You asked
that.
Seen
that.
No,
that's Be'ira. I mean, animals in the forest.
Bahamos Yar. Like a you don't see anywhere.
No, you have it.
You have it.
Yeah. Especially with the word Yar afterwards.
But the editor of the Stone Edition seems to think that it says lion like Jacob.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It says, what is it?
Where is the
lion like Jacob. Wow, very interesting.
Where is that?
On the...
But the lion is also
a like a lion among the animals.
Barbara is also because the implication of Aryeh is that he's the less numerous among the many Tzon, and that also doesn't fit a description of the Jewish people. Aryeh in an Edrei Tzon is one among...
Yeah, but I'd rather be the Aryeh than anyone else in the Tzon.
The Aryeh just has all this... It hurts everyone around it.
I don't know. Anyway, let's see how the pasuk ends. Asher imavar v'ramash the taraf the ein matzil. Yeah, come on. If they want, they can destroy and pounce, and there's no one to save those poor sheep. That's what we've been. And Micha is, Rabbi Nel is just saying this is our history, and that has to be the pshat. We would for so long be like sheep for the lion when we're going to Golos. Okay, let's go on. Now wait a second, Abravanel, are we changing direction here? Tarom yadcho al tzarecha. Not necessarily. Abravanel says what this means is that at some point after being like that for a long, long time, we will. Tarom means litzgaber, lift up your hands, have gevura, let your hands lift up on your enemies. The chol oyvecha yikaresu, in order to cut down your enemies. Now that can refer to a time in history that our generation has been fortunate enough to see, is that we would be able to stand up for ourselves finally after all that. When were we ever able to stand up for ourselves? Okay, we were always sitting ducks wherever we were. Okay, so that is how we're doing this. So according to this Mahalach of Rav Nel, which he couldn't fathom to actually see a Jewish state or Jews defending themselves against these lions, right? Where we're sort of living out this situation, right? Right? Anyone have a havamina? I mean, you know, Arabs talk about the way we occupy them, or if they occupied us, is there any havamina what they would do to us? If they won the war in 48 or something like that, or they, look what they did whenever they found in the Gush Etzion and areas where they controlled, the Jordanians took over, whatever it is. They just put everyone in bunkers and shot them.
But pre-Israel, Jews were able to live in Arab lands.
Okay.
So I heard a lecture that suggested that as long as we're subservient to the Muslims, Arabs are willing to tolerate us.
History has not shown that so well, but plenty of pogroms throughout the second millennium. So let me just go on with this. Is that Micha is calling for a time where we could lift up our hands against their enemies. Who are we talking to now? Okay, it's not so pashut. In that day, I will cut down your susim. So whenever Rashi sees susim, all right. So Rashi, the Targum says susvas amamaya, the horses of the enemy. Rashi's very often connects this to Egypt. He ezras mitzrayim shatem nishanim alehem. Torah says don't amass too many horses to a king, so that he shouldn't go back to Egypt. So he's saying v'chadis susachem mikabecha is that if you think to get help from Egypt against Assyria, which the Jews tried, then when you look at Yirmiyahu, they went to Egypt and Assyria for help against Babel. Who would think in 1943 that Israel would find itself allied with Germany against Russia 10 years from then? Right. So he says, "Vavadati Markev Osecha," and I will cut down. This is still a Bravanel. I will cut down those horses. That come against you. Rashi says that if you try to get help from Egypt, I'll cut that down. The problem with Rashi is that it's susecha mikirbecha makadosecha. Why would the prophet speak of Egypt's help in that way? Could be, then Egypt is helping you, so it's susecha. Okay.
What benefits of Egypt?
Yeah, I have a problem with all the mafarshim on this. The problem because I have a problem with the pasuk. You see, pasuk ches seems to have turned the tide of our historical experience of helplessness in pasuk vav and zayin, right? Pasuk ches says, "Lift up your hands and fight back." So why does Hashem change direction in pasuk tes? Right?
The next pasuk states, "Radak," the same. There will be no need for weapons or defenses, for there will be no more wars.
Ela v'rechav, ela basusim, and nachnu b'shem Hashem l'kenin nazkir. Right. See, what Rashi does with this is that that's why he doesn't say I'm cutting down your horses, I'm cutting down Egypt's horses. Right. And the way reading the Medak here is that actually I put down here. Anachnu b'shem Hashem l'kenin nazkir lo v'chayu lo v'kolach. Umeshalok yitzarech l'susim l'merkavot ki shalom yihyeli l'chol ha'olam acham acham et gol b'magol. Okay, this is talking about the war preceding Mashiach's time. So that's amazing to have Micha make reference to Mechamas Gog Magog is a big chiddush in Parshanut. Mechamas Gog Magog is not really mentioned until Yechezkel, an idea of a war before Mashiach's time. But if you want to read Micha into saying the same, so be it. Okay. V'hichrati orei artzecha v'horaski kol nivtzarecha. I will cut down cities of your land and I will destroy all of your strongholds. So we'll go on and you'll see how this fits. V'yichrati k'shafim miyadecha. I will cut down the witchcraft, the magic from your hands. Uma onanim lo yihiyulach. I will have no fortune tellers. Lo sa'onenu, the Torah says. I will cut down your idols and your altars, and you will no longer again bow down to the things you make. Sounds like Hosea kind of took it. What is all of this saying? From the first Havadati and the Ichrati. Okay, from the standpoint of the Radak, he's saying this is getting a little sarcastic. You won't need any of these in the last war. Okay, if you think it's magic, right, it's not your gods. It's not. Your gods won't help you. Right?
Who's the you?
Okay. Well, here he's definitely talking about Bnei Israel. At least, or Radak, Bravanel say, Rashi says that we're talking about about Bnei Israel. You will not need your castles, you will not need your walled cities, you will not need your magic. Then he's becoming sarcastic. Remember Hosea said something like this. He said, a time will come where, the same kind of sarcasm, but a different message. He says, a time will come where you will no longer have a king, you will no longer have officers, you will no longer have your trufim, and you will no longer have your bumos and your illegal sacrificing places. Well, you see what he did? He mixed up things that they're sad about not having, king and officers, and things that they should never be having in the first place.
So where is that?
Which are trufim, Perkei, Dalder Hay, and Sefer Hosea. I think he used the Chorati there also. So he says, the Chorati, I'm going to cut down these things, like I'm going to cut down your Orei Miftsar. You won't need them. But you also won't need your magic, you know. You also won't need your Ma'onanim, your fortune tellers. You have no use for any of that stuff. Okay. All right.
But the shot, that is a very negative thing. It's not a reading the shot. It's, I'm going to do all these bad things to you.
Right. In other words, even as he's saying a positive message of your ultimate salvation from Ashur,
yeah,
or whatever nation Ashur represents in the future, he's saying it in a sarcastic way. And then look how it ends: V'natashti asherecha mikirbecha bishmadati arecha. I will cut down your, destroy and demolish your asheros, are trees that were worshipped. Okay, bishmadati arecha.
Really? Yes? Is there any pun between asherecha and Ashur?
Absolutely. You find it often. I think so. Especially given Micha's tendency for puns that we saw back in Perek Aleph.
So is part of the intent of the pun saying that you're imitating Ashur and your idolatry?
Bote Achziv la'achzov. Remember that one? Achziv is the name of a place. Mm-hmm. The houses of Achziv will become Achzov. Right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did a lot of that. So
other than by Menashe, which you mentioned earlier, so there was more widespread imitation by Klal Yisrael of Ashur and idolatry and other...
Yeah, of course. You do that for 55 years, it's bound to brush off, you know. Especially when he filled the gates of Yerushalayim with blood from those who refused to worship. Yes.
Isn't he really saying, I'm going to cut down all the means by which you avoid reality? Like, isn't that
like
a
wall
city? Or
yeah, an economy. Yeah, if you'd only wake up to see what you have within me, you'd realize you don't need these things. As much as you don't need the magic and the Ma'onanim, you don't need the walled cities.
Yeah.
So I mean, you have Jews saying, you know, is that realistic? Of course, it's not. Faith is not realistic necessarily, but you know, I have Jews talking this way today also about we always know what God has the power to do. It's just a question of whether or not we deserve for that to happen. So, you know, the Jews still will go for their magical incantations, and they're still going to go for their, we just don't have any prophets today, so it's hard to compare.
We're not going to destroy our tanks, right?
Not too soon. Okay, but as the Kutzke Rebbe said, you should have ishtadlos as if though you have no faith, and you should have faith as if though you have no ishtadlos.
Right.
What's ishtadlos?
Trying. Mm-hmm. Tanks, you know, trying and making an attempt. Mm-hmm. Okay, v'yosisi ba'af v'chema nakom es hagoyim asher lo shamayim. So there's a hodgepodge in this chapter of what God is going to do to us and what God is going to do to them. And Micha makes, you know, he mixes them in a way that it's hard to tell which is which. And the fascinating thing is that you have Abravanel and Rashi and Radak who go in different directions on this. Right? That's fair enough. Everyone reads, puts prophecy into their own image. In other words, you try to fit the prophecy into your particular situation at that time and see how it fits your historical needs. Isn't that what any rabbi does with a sermon? Okay.
You tell us.
Okay. Shimu na eis asher Hashem omer. These are the obligations of a person. Micha, this parak is actually quite a a well-traveled yes. chapter.
Actually, but the last part of that last portion.
Yeah.
Vosisi ba'af b'chein mu'nokam es ha'goyim asher lo shomeyu. Kind of a whole different step here. First it's punishing Israel, and now it's punishing the goyim.
Yes, that's the hodgepodge I'm talking about here. You deserve punishment as much as they do. You're worshiping the same God they do. And the Navi refers to what's going to happen to us and what's going to happen to them in quite a mixed up way. That's what I just said, is that Rashi and Radak and Abravanel mix it up over who's talking about whom. Are we talking about Egypt? Are we talking about ourselves? Are we talking about Asher? Are we talking about ourselves? So what overall message is that lending to us is that the Navi is saying, you probably deserve the same fate that they do. But you're my chosen people. I'm gonna cut you some slack, and you'll survive. You have that too many times, sure.
Why not a worse fate? We should know better.
Well, we do have a we still have a promise that they didn't have. Okay, I must do this chapter. It's Haftorah, so let's move on. So Shimunai Tasher Hashem Omer Kum Riv Es Harim Ves Shmana Hagvaos Kolecha. This is a very common prophetic theme of calling on different elements of nature to hear these words. Right? Tazino Shemaim Vadaver Vishmar, it's in my free let the heavens and the earth be witnesses for what I'm saying. Yeshayahu does it a lot. Very, very pashut. Okay?
Also in the previous chapter they used this one thing that's like Hazinu also, come Kiri Vivim Al Yesef.
Alright, Parshas Hazinu, those words appear in Parshas Hazinu, yes indeed. Kisivim Alei, Yisirifivim Alei Deshe. Alright, so this is what they should hear. Shimu Harim Esviv Hashem, Va'isanim Moshe Oretz. Listen to this argument that Hashem has, the mountains. Now Rashi says, the Harim are the Avos, the Gvaos, or the Imahos, whatever it is, whether it's metaphorical or not, he's calling on various elements of nature to hear these words. God has a big China against you. And God has a real case against us. Okay? And now God talks to us the way Yirmiyahu does in chapter 2 of his book. He's saying, Ami, so what happened if you read Gimel?
Ami, Nasis Yuho. Mohel,
My people, what have I done to you that I deserve that you behave this way to me? I had the right to feel that we had a pact. You know, we forged some kind of deal together. At Har Sinai, we were married. I gave you a land. I took into my home. I gave you a place to live. I gave you your sustenance. Think back to Hosea, and so I thought we had a deal. I gave you such great leaders. I gave you Moshe. I gave you Aaron. I gave you Miriam.
Now, is this unusual to quote Miriam as one of the principal leaders in the desert?
Yeah,
I think
so.
Is it unique?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that I was just talking to someone recently about on Shmini Atzeres. You ever see the Tefillah for Geshem?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this woman was saying to me, why didn't they have a chapter for Miriam? You know,
right.
She's the biggest one for water. You know, and, well, you say make it rain for Yaakov. What did Yaakov do to make it rain? You know, make it rain for Eliyahu. It rained for Miriam. You know, she's the one with the water.
Yeah, I read an article saying they seem to go out of their way to find connections to these other men and to not no connection to Miriam.
To Miriam, where the connection is obvious.
So, right. What did you say to
her? I said that the Rashi Tevos fit a certain name of the author, and there's no room for a mem in that authorship. but anyway, we're going to say
that's
you could have called her something else, maybe. That's the point.
No, it didn't have the paragraph didn't have to begin with the word Miriam. The paragraph begins with something else, but no, it's a crime answer.
Right.
It's probably similar to this story about the. I'm not sure which Rebbe it was. I think it was the Tanza Rebbe. There was a couple that was having a baby, and The mother had to go mamish right to the hospital. They had no chance to call even the babysitter. They just figured, I'll take her to drive to the hospital and I'll drive back home 10, 15 minutes later. And they had a lot of other kids at home, but they very responsibly left them all at home. And one of the little girls in the house, a five-year-old girl, got up while the parents were both away. She went to the bedroom, saw no one there, but she got very scared. She went into the drawer and saw a phone book and called up the first name that was in the phone book, which was the Tzanza Rebbe. She called him up at 3 o'clock in the morning and said, my parents are not in the room, I'm very scared. And he knew that they were, that she was very much expecting, and figured that that's where they went. And he just kept her on the phone and kept talking to her, and until the father came home, picked up the phone, saw that who she was talking to, and he said, Rabbi, I'm so sorry, don't worry, it's fine. So the next morning, he went over to a newspaper to tell the story of how wonderful it was that the Tzanza Rebbe stayed up with my daughter at 3 o'clock in the morning. The story appeared in the paper that the Tzanza Rebbe, you know how it appeared? Your parents, you?
No,
told the whole story, but they had him talking to a boy.
Oh.
Really?
When did this happen?
It's in this community. 4 or 5 years ago. Of course, because they didn't want to have it for the readers. It appeared like one of these Hamodia or the Yateid Ne'aman or something. And they had that the Tzanza Rebbe kept the boy up for a half hour while his parents were coming home.
And the police didn't come to arrest the parents.
Wait, so how does that...
So I don't know, these authors didn't, you know, they weren't named... Pashnish, I don't know what it is. Are we going to change the nusach? Is it would for sure would put in a paragraph about Miriam if it feels Geshem, you know? We need someone with broad shoulders. You know, at least find one got a lot door already. You know, if I did something like that, everyone would throw eggs at my shoulder and say, "What's who's this guy who's starting the Nunes Chalos?"
Maybe you could
let Yashik do it, and then everyone would follow.
Maybe you could put somewhere that's outside of this.
Someone who's already written his tshuvas, because if you do that, no one will read your tshuvas anymore.
Maybe it's outside the service, like after. At the end of davening or something.
Yeah. Look, I remember once gave a drush about 10 years ago with Parshas Vayera about the fact that our tefillos are so parochial. Oseh shalom v'mamav yaseh shalom aleinu. Sim shalom tov aruch ha'chein v'chas rachamim aleinu v'al kol Yisrael. We're always asking for peace for all the Jews. Take care of the Jews, peace for the Jews. Once, is there any prayer in our aleinu v'al kol Yisrael amecha? V'cheinu avinu kolon ke'achod v'ra panachu
g'ribana. Well, the aleinu. The Lenin prayer is more about all of mankind and all of the world should come to
the
whole world will progress.
Some other denominations have added in things to
So I would just say that you know, we shouldn't change a nusach that we're doing. But what we did was we say a special prayer. You know, you remember you hear it upstairs. This is something Birkas Shalom Berechas Kulo Ha'olam, it's Olam Kulo B'Shalom. Not just the people of Israel, but the whole world. In one prayer, we'll do it. Anyway, let's give it. In the Tefillah for the Medina, at the end of the Tefillah, you see.
And when Rabbi Berman allowed a Torah in the women's section on Simchat Torah, it was on Sukkot. It was the first day only. The second day, he was bombarded and he changed his mind the second day.
Which Rabbi Berman?
Saul Berman.
Okay. So let's see what's going on here with Miriam. Ami, Sephor no mayo ach polok melech mov. I guess you know which haftorah this is, right? Okay, this is the haftorah of Parshas
Bolok. It's not the only time that Bolok is measured and is mentioned in the Nevi'im, though. So I guess they decided specifically to
use it. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. Ami zechor no mayo atz polak melech moav u'me'ona oso bilam ben be'or nashitim ha'gilgo l'man da'atzit kos Hashem. Now, you know, there's something that this pasuk reveals to us that I did not know from the Torah. It says, think of what Balak, the king of Moab, advised and how Bilam answered him at the shitim until Gilgo in order to reveal the great tzidkos of Hashem. It's a cryptic pasuk. It's a explained by Chazal, Rashi puts it down here. But what happened at Shittim in Parshas Bilam, Parshas Balak? What happened in Shittim?
At
Baal Peor? Yeah, Baal Peor. That's where the women, the men were mizaneh after the women in Baal Peor. So in you see, in Parshas Balak, there is no indication that Bilam had anything to do with that. It says that Bilam went home, mm-hmm. went on his way, and then the very next story is that the daughters of Moab caused this great trespass with Baal Peor.
But then when they kill him, don't they say...
Oh, excellent, excellent. Yes, there too one could ask in Parshas... I shouldn't have said the Torah, I'm sorry. I should have said Parshas Balak. Absolutely. In Parshas Matos, when the Jews go to war against the Midianites, it says that, you know, Cosby Bas Tzur. Tzur was one of the Midianite kings. He sent his daughter to Ghana with Jews to cause them a problem. Because Bilam saw, like, we can't get them by cursing them. Let's see if we can get them with love and with, you know, with his nus, by embracing them, which worked. So there it says they killed Bilam. Remember, Stan? Linsormal bash. It's Bilam and Bolin Sormal Bashem al Dvar Peor. Says they killed Bilam because of what he did with Peor. There you go. So indeed, yeah, I have an encouragement, it's not in Parshas Balak. The question is, why doesn't Parshas Balak connect Bilam to that story? Is that the Jews should never give an excuse that we worship Baal Peor because of Bilam's insistence or Bilam's enticements. We worship Baal Peor, it's our fault. Right? It doesn't tell us in the story itself, in Parshas Balak, what Bilam's role was with Peor, and here we are. With Das Sitkos Hashem is, you should know that the great Sitkos of Hashem in not utterly destroying us because of what happened in that story. Okay, but Ma Akadem Hashem Ikaf Lelokei Marom. What is Ikaf? Now the Shoresh of Ikaf in the Brown Driver in Briggs is Kofaf. Kofaf means to be in Rashi agrees. Kofaf means kofuf means to
bend,
to kneel. To kneel.
To submit. Has to do with, I mean, it's different, but it has to do with an instrument. Maybe that's tafel or
something. Kof isn't
the kof. Yeah. The BDB calls it nifal atid shoresh kof pei pei.
Oh, I see. Yeah, and the sheet it gives for tanuma, but is that on this sheet also?
No, I gave you that. It's coming up. It's coming up shortly. It's coming up from the two children.
Yeah.
Hakadmenu ba'olos ba'adolim b'nei shana. What can I bring before God in order to show my subservience to the Lord on high? Can I bring him many burnt offerings? Can I bring him lots of calves a year old? Hayotzei Hashem ba'alfei ilim b'rivivos nachalei shomen. Ha'atein b'chori pishi pribidni chatas nafshi. Whoa. Would God want thousands of rams? Would he want 10,000s of animals that are very fat? Should I give my firstborn? Wow, Chori. Does he mean a human being? I don't think so. The Chori Pishi means, should I bring a firstborn animal for my Pesha? Right? The sin of my soul. So,
what about the fruit of
the fruit of my belly? That doesn't.
That sounds like.
It's like I'm talking about you. This is the same, like you said.
Yeah. All right. I mean, you think? I mean, Micha is probably once again dealing with great sarcasm to the people. Yeah. What can you do for God to beg forgiveness for all you've done? To thank him for what he didn't destroy you with war. Can you want to even give your firstborn son to him? Right? Okay. Possibly. All right. Now, please remember that practically every one of the Nevi'im Acharonim who has a book of any decent size that does not dedicate the entire book to the downfall of the Goyim, that would mean the exception of Nachum, Chavakuk, Yonah, Ovadia. All those prophets say at one point in their book how much they despise what the institution of Kabbanos has descended to. Okay? And it's not so much that the Kabbanos are brought bad, that the Kabbanos are wrong. It's that the people bringing them are bad. Kabbanos may be perfectly good. Right? There's one prophet that speaks of what may be good people bringing bad Kabbanos. That's Malachi. Right?
Hello.
In other words, today we might consider
today, and I have
okay.
a...
Are we ready?
No. You're just about early.
Okay.
Come on in. Today we might consider, you know, you go to, let's say, a very early minyan, and these are wonderful people. Go to any of them, and ask for tzedakah, and they're right there for you in a second. But they're davening in 17 minutes. Right? The davening is questionable. Here, what Micha's talking about, people who are probably bringing good korbanos. They're ready. They might even be ready to give up their own son as a korban, but their deeds outside of that is to be questioned.
Can you look at it as a contrast to the next sentence?
Yeah.
We're supposed to give up. What are we supposed to do?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
For Micha, right? He gives lecha adam matzav. I'll tell you what's good. Forget about all those korbanos. Mashem Deresh Mimcha, what does God want from you? Now, whenever you see Mashem, it's like, all I ask is Asos Mishpat Avas Chesed Batznei Alechasim Elokecha. Wow. There is a Gemara at the end of Makos that says that this Pasuk encapsulates the Torah, the whole Torah. Ba Micha Vehemido Al Shalosh. Makos Dafchav.
When I ask Rav Fisher, what should I do?
Yeah?
He said Chesed.
Well, Chesed, Mishpat, and Hatznei Alechas, three things. But I guess Chesed can possibly encapsulate them. I gave you the sheet here to figure out what Tznius means. You see the word in it doesn't give you too many ancient languages. It does not appear in other ancient languages. Modest, humble, reserved, tiring, modest, to walk humbly. Okay. What is Tsnua's opposite? Toratz, right? What does the throat mean?
To break
boundaries. Ma parasta lecha peretz. The child who broke through and pushed ahead of Zerah. Or how about Peretz Uza? Where David felt that there was a breach when the Aron fell, and he called that place Peretz Uza. So that's a prutza. Dresses in a way that calls attention to herself. It's not reserved and covered, but bursting out and open. A parrot listens to music loud in a public thoroughfare. A parrot smokes in an elevator. A parrot talks loud in a
Polish town is a sugar.
Yeah.
A library.
Okay. A parrot. I mean, there's lots of behavior that we can have that where parrots means I'm oblivious to the fact that there are other people out there. Right? Well, I'll park the car and let out my passengers and block the whole street. Now, some people don't do this on purpose. I'm not saying people do this on purpose, but it's an element of tznius means that I am not going to.
Unrestrained.
So here's the pasuk in Micha, and the Gemara at the end of Sukkah gives two examples of tznius. If you're at a wedding and everyone's dancing, dance. If you're at a funeral and everyone's crying, cry. Now, I can certainly think of more obvious examples of tznius, right? And it just means just don't stand out. Obviously, there are times that we have to stand out and understand if everything is going wrong, right? And in fact, the Gemara in Yevamos, right, says that there are three signs of the Jews: they're Achmonim, Baishonim, and Gomlei Chasadim. Okay, Baishonim refers to this tznius, and sources 6 and 7. I'm going to have to wait till next time to discuss. They have to do with tznius for men as well as women. It's just such a funny sight. I remember when we did a Shabbaton some years back. It's a boiling hot day. This guy is playing tennis with a young girl, and he's wearing shorts, no shirt, and she's wearing a long skirt and long sleeves, and it's ridiculous. And there's no rhyme and reason with such a situation. I mean, men have to, you know, also are not supposed to draw attention to the body with the way a man dresses. So anyway, so that's the thing, tznius and preaches. But notice that it says Hatznei Alechas in Elokecha. Not just talking about Hatznei Alechas. I mean, God knows what I look like, you know, all around. But still, that Hatznei Alechas with Hashem, Kavachomer with people. Right? Okay, we're going to stop with Pasuk Tes. I'm starting in the middle of a parak. Okay. Okay, Micha just has a pair of Vav and a pair of Zion, so we're going to try to finish next week. Okay. And after Micha, we are really flying. After Micha, I think we did Hoshea, we did Amos, we did Yoel, we did Yonah. We had said we did last year again. I think we have to do up to Obadiah, right? And then we can start the last six. We're smoking. Okay. Oh, when we finish Micha, we'll do that. We'll look at this. If anyone wants a copy of the Tomer Dvorah, hi, I see. You losing some weight there?
Yeah. What was the occasion
for what?
Sometimes it's
Alan. Okay, let's quickly switch over. Yeah, dinner, anybody needs?